I'm Bill Littlefield, and it's time for three stories you should know.
Gentlemen, the hopes and dreams of an entire town are riding on your shoulders. You may never matter more than you do right now. It's time.
That's from the 2004 high school football movie Friday Night Lights, and we're going to start this week by talking about the future of that phenomenon. Joining me are Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports via Skype and Claire McNear from The Ringer. Welcome back to both of you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Patrick, why don't you take it away?
So at the risk of shameless self-promotion, which if you know me, you know it's not something I really consider a risk, I want to talk about a story that I wrote for Vice Sports. It's a long feature, and it's called Friday Night Lights Out, and it's the case for abolishing high school football. I followed a guy in Las Vegas. His name is Russell Davis. He campaigned for the Clark County School Board out there. It's about the fifth biggest school district in the country, explicitly on a platform of eliminating high school football. Now, as you might expect, this being America, it's not a very popular platform, and Russell Davis did not win his race. But I think the issues he raised are not going away. Should schools be in the business of football? And there's really kind of like three parts to the case of why they shouldn't. The first is medical. This is the one we're all paying attention to. The more we study how football affects the brain, the more we realize it's pretty bad. We've got former high school players, guys that never played a down in college or the NFL, being diagnosed with CTE. So that kind of leads to the ethical case against the sport, which is schools are supposed to be in the business of protecting and nurturing young brains. So what are they doing sponsoring a sport that seems to be putting those brains at significant risk? And why are taxpayers subsidizing that? And that's sort of the third point. High school football is very expensive. And while sometimes these teams can make a little bit of money and help sponsor other sports, most of the time they lose money. And the Dallas Morning News looked at this, and they found in Texas that most of the schools were losing money on high school football, which is kind of amazing. So the question really is, you know, what are we getting in our investment here? And the answer might be not a lot and not something that's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the one of the scariest things about this sort of debate we've been having about safety in football is you hear all these players saying that they didn't know what the risks were. After Concussion came out, I think it was last year with Will Smith in it, it was a big hit, and you had all these NFL players coming out and just saying they had no idea. And they were shocked and they were horrified and they were angry, and rightfully so. So I guess I wonder if there's a way to incorporate education of the risks into football. And I mean, I don't know if you think that's possible at that level, but
that's a really good question. It's also one of the things that make this so thorny at the high school level, because the idea of informed consent, and again, we're talking about minors here. So it's really really kids' parents, not just the kids themselves. What are the risks? And the truth is, like, they're kind of fuzzy right now. It's hard for us to sort of quantify and define them because we haven't been studying this problem for that long. So it's actually really hard to come up with sort of an informed consent form. And secondly, again, because we're talking about minors, there's sort of the question there of, like, is this even appropriate?
Well, I have to take a stand on this issue. I like happy crowds. I like people coming together to have fun at what is usually a big party. I'm in favor of youngsters getting credit for doing things well. And if the credit comes in the form of cheering crowds, so much the better. It's great. However, brain damage I'm not in favor of. So when the bright lights go on of a Friday night or of a Saturday afternoon or of a Thanksgiving Day evening or whatever it is, can the game at the center of the celebration be flag football? Would anybody go?
That's a great question as well. All these things that are true and good benefits of high school football, you could get all of those without the tackling. And that kind of speaks to what is it that we all really like about this sport? Is it all their stuff, or is it actually the violence?
I love the crickets chirping as that question sits, waiting for somebody to punt it somewhere.
You can't see me, but I'm flinching.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's the dirty secret, at the dirty not-so-secret at the center of football. The reason it's the most popular sport in America is because it's the sport we can watch and see people get their knees torn up and their heads beaten up. And as long as that's not happening to the people in the stands, they enjoy it thoroughly.
One last really quick point. You know, people say we love football too much. This can never change. And honestly, that's a pretty compelling argument. On the other hand, I would say if you went to your local high school and said, hey, guys, let's start a high school boxing team, people will look at you like you're crazy. So things can definitely change.
Claire, it is December, and I understand you have a baseball story for us anyway, right?
I sure do. So next week, baseball's winter meetings will take place just outside of Washington, D.C. And one of the changes that's already been announced is that the Oakland A's will be phased out of revenue sharing, which had been providing the team with about $35 million a year. This has been taken as a sign that the A's owners are finally willing to invest in a new stadium, probably in Oakland. But the owners are notoriously thrifty. They have one of the lowest payrolls in baseball. I think it's 26th of the 30 teams. And a habit of trading fan favorites just when they get good and expensive. As a result, attendance in Oakland is some of the lowest in the league. So my question is, you know, should they just sell instead?
I mean, look, this is my answer for all, across all pro sports. It's like, since there's a limited number of teams, since these leagues sort of have quasi-monopolies, or it's like in baseball's case, they actually have an antitrust exemption. And since there, you know, there's plenty of concentrated wealth in our country, and I think in the Bay Area, there's a lot of rich people. That's what I've heard. I'm not sure. So my thing would be, yes, they should sell. If you can't afford to be in this game, and by the way, a rigged game where, like, basically it's really hard to not make money, then absolutely you should sell to someone richer who was willing to maybe lose money once in a while in order to have a competitive team. I don't think there's really that much question about it. But my question for Claire is, I'm pretty intrigued, is when you say the owners are maybe willing to put money into a new stadium, does that mean that they're expecting the public to put even more money into a stadium, or how's that going to work?
That never happens.
Yeah, you know, that it's unclear. They've sort of been dancing around this idea for the last decade. The mayor of Oakland has kind of taken a hard stand against using public money for stadiums, at least as far as the Raiders are concerned, which is sort of why the Raiders have been having this public flirtation with Vegas and some other places. But, you know, the strange thing about the A's is that when the current owners bought the team in 2005, they were one of the richest ownerships in baseball. And they've just not really invested in the team. And they like to blame the attendance problems on the Coliseum, which, to be fair, is a dump.
Raw sewage problems, right?
There's raw sewage, and it's just concrete everything. And it's the last NFL and MLB dual-use stadium in existence. But, you know, it seems like the problems might go beyond just that.
This is an old story that won't go away, although with the revenue sharing change, it does have a new twist. However, I have the solution to this if the owners are listening at this point. If I were king of the forest, I would arrange to have Theo Epstein put in charge of the front office in Oakland, and then it wouldn't matter who owned the team because they would win the World Series and everybody would be happy and attendance would go way up. So that would solve the problem, right?
I have a more plausible solution, which is, like, tell Donald Trump, President-elect Trump, that the A's are going to move to Japan, and then we'll get all sorts of government subsidy and they can stick around and pay their players a decent wage.
All right. For my topic, I would like to turn to the opposite end of the sports quality spectrum. LeBron James was named Sports Person of the Year by Sports Illustrated. And the rationale is obvious. Besides being a very good basketball player, he's the guy most responsible for bringing Cleveland a championship. And that's something that hadn't happened there since the Browns finished atop the NFL back in 1964. Many people now living were alive when that happened. Almost nobody now living was alive when the Chicago Cubs last won baseball's North American Championship, called by some the World Series. How could SI not have named the entire Cubs organization Sportsperson of the Year? And if they had to give it to just one person, fine, give it to Ernie Banks. He's dead, but so what? They gave it to a horse one year. It's a silly award anyway, but it certainly should have gone to the Chicago Cubs this time around. Missed opportunity. Do better next time, SI.
Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree here. You know, you mentioned LeBron James. You know, he not only was responsible for delivering Cleveland that championship, he was also responsible for delivering the Golden State Warriors blowing a 3-1 lead in the NBA Finals. So on behalf of the entire internet, I have to go with LeBron. He's a much better meme.
Claire, are you okay with that? You're going to break the tie.
Oh, well, you know, I think, Billy, that's spoken a little bit like somebody who thinks this Cubs win was a one-time deal. But I think Sports Illustrated...
No, it happens about every 110 years. It's no problem.
But I think Sports Illustrated might have a little bit of a bias towards things that would look good on covers. Mm. And I think LeBron James crying on the floor looks a little bit better. There's no kind of single iconic image, I think. There are a lot of, you know, great images of the Cubs' victory, but there's not just the one. You know, there's no J.R. Smith with his shirt off in the parade, so...
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sports Illustrated also produces a swimsuit issue, so I cannot believe you'd accuse them of being biased towards things that look good on covers.
I'm going to let you guys in on my hot take, which is that I think the Cubs are the new Red Sox in that they will win again because they're a great team and they're a lot of fun and they're young, but they will soon draw the ire of fans across the country. Mm. And SI gave the award to the Red Sox in 2004. And, you know, honestly, I think they're afraid of the backlash this time.
Claire, I kind of hope you're right. It would take the heat off the Red Sox. That'd be all right. My guess for this week's three stories you should know have been Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports and Claire McNear from The Ringer. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks as always.